Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
One stop. He's making cut with his Odyssey.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, everybody, welcome on back. It's another edition of Mode Push, an American view of F1. Thanks for being with us on our F1 podcast as we explore everything across the entire sport of F1. The racing is becoming less and less interesting. And you know what? I was actually very disappointed this week because the rumors didn't fly nearly as much as I wanted. All the off-the-track stuff. We were just so blessed, Dan Jimenez, with all of these crazy off-track stories and crazy rumors and things like that. I'm like jonesing for a controversy. Now, there's always kind of controversy brewing underneath everything in F1, but regardless, I wanted some crazy sensational headlines this week, and we didn't really get them as much. Instead, we got a straightforward race, another Red Bull 1-2 in Saudi Arabia, but a British F2 driver, Ollie Bearman, firing it up with Carlos Sainz, an appendectomy. Again, second year in a row, an appendectomy took somebody off the grid right before a race. Last year was Alex Albon. This year it's Ollie Bearman coming in for Carlos Sainz. He finishes P7. That made the whole weekend for me. How are you, Dan?
Oh, I'm great. Yeah, that saved the weekend from an entertainment perspective because Max threw a wet blanket on everything. But yeah, it's super cool. I mean, 18 years old. Like, imagine what you and I were doing at 18 years old and being like, okay, guess what? You're going to get in not just Formula One car, but a Ferrari. And yeah, don't screw it up, kid. I mean, he is. I don't think you can understate how incredible a performance that is. That's like calling somebody up from like college football and like saying you're starting in a playoff, NFL football game, and expect them to be ready for the task. It's an incredible feat.
It was pretty awesome. P7 gets you 6 points, and the hilarious thing was that he's made kind of a meteoric rise in all the different series that he's been in. I think he was in kind of like a couple different versions of Formula 4, basically, in Europe. He won both of those, or at least one of those, and then got to Formula 3, maybe, and then like impressed there as well. I think maybe even won the series there. And so then he's in Formula 2. Last year, I think, was his first go in Formula – or no, it was, maybe it was in Formula 3.
Yeah, last year was his first Formula 2 season.
Yeah, so
he finished sixth.
He finished sixth, and this past weekend won pole for the F2 race in Saudi Arabia, and that's probably why Ferrari goes, listen, the guy has been – hitting in and out of these corners, which are very difficult. You throw a guy in there who hasn't been racing, plus he's there at the racetrack. So there's like convenience sake, you go, hey, we have the cockpit here, because they travel around, I guess, with all the different seats in there to fit these guys. And you could imagine. And what's funny is, too, is the radio call from Bearman was like, they're like, Ollie, P7, well done. Well done, P7. 6 points, and he's like, yeah, sorry guys, could have done a little bit better. And you're like, come on, dude, come on, quit being one of those F1 overachievers, like, quit it. So when you see a performance like that, you tell me, is that something where you go, oh yeah, obviously he has to show up and he has to perform, but he's also in probably the second fastest car on the grid, I mean, team wise right? And that's an advantage, because all the people going into the weekend were like, oh yeah, he should probably get in the points. I mean, he'll definitely be like top eight. And then he ended up P7. And then you go, well, you can't just say, hey, some guy's going to finish P8. It's or top eight in his case, P7. I don't know. Is it one of these things where, because everybody now is talking about put him in a Haas seat, get him in a Ferrari power unit, whatever it might be, but get him in a seat so that he can develop, because now you have kind of a superstar there. Or are we overplaying what he did?
I mean, we know that Ferrari car, that Carlos Sainz car, is a podium car.
Yeah.
And that was probably what it was capable of, like Max third, second place this week. But like, you just put in an 18-year-old who's driven around Jeddah in an F2 car, which, they're not slow, but they're like I mean, 10 to 15 seconds slower around that track than an F1 car, which is incredible. I think it was 18-second difference. And, like, you're not putting them in at Bahrain with a million square feet of runoff area. There's no runoff area. It's walls everywhere. You see, you know, Lance Stroll made a mistake on lap 2 or 3, right?
Right.
And, you know, he didn't put a foot wrong the entire, you know, weekend, or at least the little bit of the weekend that he was actually racing in. So, yeah, no, there's no downplaying it. There's no asterisks. There's, you know, he legitimately earned that seventh place, even though, you know, the Ferrari is a fast car. There's, you know, it was either probably a top 10 or a DNF, and I would have put my money on a DNF, and he took care of it. And the lap times towards the end of the race, you could compare him to Charles, and there was a pretty big gap on their lap times for the first half of the race. And then the second half, when he started to settle in and get more comfortable, he was as fast as Charles. So, I mean, is he the next, you know, best thing since sliced bread? We were all saying this after Nyck de Vries scored points in his first race. So, I mean, it's possible for an F2 driver, an experienced F2 driver, to come in, get put in a good car, and have a points finish. We've seen it before. Does that translate to consistent points finishes once they become full-time in the sport? Not necessarily. But, man, like, this guy's legitimately quick, and everything he's ever raced in, he's won. He has the talent. And so, yeah, Ferrari has the convenience now to move him up through the ranks and, you know, very likely take a Haas seat next year. To start developing a bit more before he could move into Ferrari.
So obviously the Haas seat that everybody would be likely pointing to would be Kevin Magnussen's seat, although he had like a weirdly helpful but also hurt his
weird
stock. I'd be like,
weird race.
How many penalties did he end up incurring? How many seconds of penalties did he end up incurring? It was at least 10 seconds,
20.
Wasn't it? 20 seconds.
Yeah, he had two different 10-second penalties, which are new this year. Those would have been 5 seconds each. But yeah, once he had 20 seconds, like, hey, your race is over. Hey, you're in a pretty good spot. Can you just slow the entire field up for your buddy?
And he did.
It was actually pretty cool.
So there you go. First points of the season for Haas. That means that Haas is solidly in sixth place, I think, in the constructors, because there are four other teams who haven't scored any points yet. Who's the most disappointing for you so far this year? I just read an article about Daniel Ricciardo being very unimpressive so far, and that Helmut Marko has got his eye on him. And I'm like, Helmut Marko has his eye on everybody. He's ready to fire anybody at any moment. It's fine. But is it Daniel Ricciardo? Yuki Tsunoda's been kind of quick, but also both of those guys in the RB Visa Cash App .com car, whatever it is they want to call it. My favorite is how the commentators try to deal with it. The RB car, whatever they call it. So
the RB V carb.
I don't know, because we were just assuming that they are going to basically be a slightly slower version of the RB20, but because they're in they're sharing factories and parts are a lot more accessible now. Whatever. I don't know. I feel like that team is the one that's been the most disappointing so far.
Yeah, we had high hopes for him, and they have not panned out. And especially Danny Ric, he's getting outdriven by Yuki in qualifying and the race. And I mean, before Danny Ric came back, you know, he got let go by, or, you know, bought out by McLaren, and he was pretty much washed up. And, you know, we all got excited after he was, you know, quick in the Red Bull at that Silverstone test. And he's had, I guess, the Mexican GP finish late last season was a good one. And he had top, I think it was fourth or something.
Yeah.
It was a great finish. Other than that, he hasn't really done much. And I imagine Red Bull will be more patient with him because of how experienced he is. And they know, you know, what he's capable of. So maybe he gets a longer leash than Nyck de Vries did, but there's no guarantees. You know, he has no guaranteed seat next year if he doesn't perform.
He's probably he's probably kind of expensive too, right? Like, I mean, compared to what they would be getting in a second seat kind of guy out of, behind Yuki. I know he's not the $25 million he was getting at Renault, but I mean, he's got to be still more expensive.
Yeah, he's more expensive than Nyck de Vries was. So, I mean, but he, you know, has the whole like Red Bull marketing value that comes with him, but that marketing value is going to go away pretty quick if he keeps finishing 17th. So, he's got the biggest target on his back in the grid right now.
I say most disappointing because we've already written off Alpine. Sorry, I didn't want to be. We had written off Alpine before the season started. I don't want.
That's not the driver's fault, but yeah, that's the team's fault.
So I want everybody to know we're well aware of Alpine being kind of an F2 feeder car at this point, but it's not pretty for the French team. But I think there's also guys like Lance Stroll who put the car on the wall, like you said. I mean, that's a guy who's supposed to be performing like right off the bat, especially when they had, I mean, Fernando continues to just get every bit out of the car every weekend, it seems like. And, you know, I think that and McLaren right now is ahead of even Mercedes. I think it goes in the constructor standings, it goes Red Bull, Ferrari, and then McLaren is just ahead of Mercedes, which I think is, you know, something to be said for Zach Brown's team, a guy who we all kind of look at and go, he's going to be always on the hot seat if he can't figure this thing out. And I don't think McLaren has everything figured out, by the way. They just seem to be putting themselves in the right place, getting the points where they need to. I don't know where they're slow. I don't know where they're slow exactly. Like, it's always a confusing thing to me when we talk about slow speed corner and medium speed corner and high speed corners versus, you know, straights and things like that, and how some teams are really good in some of those and really good and not good on the straights or whatever it might be, which I think is McLaren's case. They're not real good on the straights. But I'm not sure what it looks like with McLaren long term, but certainly compared to last season, they got off to a really, really bad start. And now they're kind of in a way better spot than they were compared to last year.
Yeah, they're off to a much better start than this time last year. There was a really cool segment during the race when Lewis, I believe, was catching Lando, and or maybe it was George catching Lando. I think it was Lewis trying to catch Lando because I think they're on the same pit strategy. Anyways, so when he was catching him like down that super long front stretch, then they'd get into the first sector and like Lando would just walk away from Lewis. Like he would put, I mean, they'd go into that first corner half a second apart and he'd put a full second on the Mercedes in a sector, like basically like 6-7 corners. And those were all the high speed, high downforce stuff. So McLaren's definitely running a higher downforce setup and faster in the high speed corners, like high medium speed corners. And then when they get on the straight, like you said, they throw a parachute out and everyone else can catch them. So McLaren needs to figure out how to get some better downforce, like drag optimization. But they're really quick. So they're going to be good in the high downforce tracks. We're going to Australia. That's about a medium downforce track. So when they get to, you know, some of these other tracks that are more optimized for high downforce, then they'll, you know, be fighting for the podium again. And then on the Aston Martin side, yeah, I, you know, for them, the goal is to be the best of the rest, but now Mercedes has kind of dropped out of that top three, like as a clear top three. And so there's a chance to be third. And so the Aston Mercedes McLaren fight is very interesting because they're, you know, McLaren and Aston are customer teams to Mercedes AMG, and they're not supposed to be fighting those guys for points, but they are. So Mercedes AMG still has a ways to go for sure. Lewis is slow. I think I saw a stat that this is Lewis's worst start, worst point start. Like
what, through like two races or something?
Through two races is in the current point system.
Oh, geez.
Which I think has been around for 10 years plus. So basically his worst start in 10 years.
I mean, look, if you're Ollie Bearman, you go, yeah, I just showed up and beat Lewis Hamilton. No big deal. Like that was like the thing all weekend long where you're going, look at the guys who he's ahead of in this race, right? I mean, like it's bonkers to see a guy like that. But I mean, obviously, I mean, you can see the despair on Toto Wolff's face every race. They show him in the he's not on the pit wall. He's inside the garage wherever he watches, you know, everything. But he looks like, compared to the guy who we saw, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when he was winning, you know, his seventh and eighth, team title. He looks like, you know those back-to-back pictures they show of like Barack Obama before he went into into office and after, and you're like, oh yeah, that's Toto Wolff right now. Like he is living through some stuff here. And part of it is because he's a part owner of the team. I mean, he's not going to get fired. I don't see the board of Mercedes going, we've all taken the vote and we're going to buy back your ownership. He's the billionaire face of this freaking team, and he doesn't have a lot of answers right now. And Mercedes, frankly, with Lewis on the way out, with Ollie Bearman in the seat at Ferrari, or in, you know, kind of this on-the-rise superstar type guy, and I know they have this Antonelli guy or whatever his name is that's coming up, kind of same thing, supposed to be some superstar for Mercedes, but they don't, like, the future looks kind of bleak right now unless that car gets figured out.
Yeah. And they almost had a disaster on the last lap. George Russell had a right front tire going down, and you can see he lost like he gave up like 4 seconds in the last lap to Oliver Bearman. And it had that been one lap earlier, he would have been done. Like that would have been a DNF type of scenario. He couldn't have made it a second lap. And so, yeah, they got very lucky on that. So, yeah, Mercedes, man, I hope they can get things figured out because we want more competitive teams at the top for sure.
Sure. Okay. So I was looking at another piece of something here on just kind of some of the things that are going on. This one's outside of it. Will you please explain to me the Felipe Massa lawsuit with F1 and the FIA? What's going on with that? Because this is a guy who, as we look back on it, I mean, it's almost like an accepted truth now that the guy should have won a driver's championship, and he never got to with Ferrari. I'm not sure, but Bernie Ecclestone actually commented on this whole thing, and he said if he had asked me, I would have said that he has the complete right to sue the FIA and F1 and have an English judge decide if it's what is right and what is wrong, which I think is crazy. I mean, obviously F1 and the FIA are not commenting on this, but what's kind of the history and what are we looking at here? Because there's just no way. I feel like sports are funny because we don't just like retroactively go back and give world championships to people. Although we are pretty good at going back and giving gold medals to people if they didn't, and finding people that get disqualified years later.
Yeah, this is wild that this is still going. I kind of had almost forgotten about it until it popped back up in the news today, reminding all of us that no, he's still going.
He's still going after it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Felipe Massa, Brazilian driver, was with Ferrari and also he was with the Jenson Button team. Why can't I think of the
name? Is that Williams? Is it Williams?
No, the one that became Mercedes.
I know you're talking about. Yes.
God, they did the documentary on it. I'm totally blanking. I can see the color of the car. So Jenson Button, Felipe Massa.
It was the Braun. It was the Braun.
Braun GP.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's Ferrari Braun GP. And in 2008, he was racing for the championship. Him and Lewis were really close, kind of neck and neck for the championship. And they go to Singapore and at Singapore, Nelson Piquet Jr. Crashes at a very convenient time for his teammate Felipe Alonso, who had gone long in the stint to be able to pit, retain the lead, and win the race. And so it was speculated from the get-go that like that was really fishy. Did he do that to help his teammate win?
Yeah.
And so there was an investigation. They didn't really know. Like nothing was conclusive. The season ends. Lewis Hamilton wins the drivers' championship. And then last year, in some interview with the media, Bernie Ecclestone, who was the FIA president at the time, says that like they had enough evidence that they knew back in 2008 before the end of the season that Piquet had crashed on purpose. So Felipe Massa's argument is you guys didn't do your job. You should have investigated this. You should have overturned the results of the race. And if basically you had DQ'd Nelson Piquet and Fernando, then the way the points would have stacked out at the end of the season is Felipe Massa would have won. So he's suing for £64 million, and for the overturning of the results to crown him the driver champion for the year. So it's still going on. I don't know how long it's going to take for them to rule on this, but it's basically Felipe Massa versus the FIA, which is separate from Formula One.
Sure.
FIA is the rules side of it. Think of them as like the referees.
Right.
And the referees didn't do their job. And where Formula One is more like the association, right? They're the commercial rights holders. So he's suing the FIA and, Bernie Ecclestone, not personally, but Bernie Ecclestone, who was in charge of it, is kind of the one who they're saying didn't do his job.
They're probably just going, you know what, we're going to do everything possible to make sure this doesn't happen, because then the entire sport gets called into question, you know, retroactively. Right? There's going to be a million different I just don't know if this will be one of those things that they even ever entertain. Even if you do take it to a court of law, it's like, fine, but will they overturn it? I don't know. That's like, I can't see a judge going, and you have to overturn this. Your sport needs to do this, rather than just say, oh, yeah, he has the right to sue him. And maybe they end up settling fine, but they will not. they'd pay him $64 million or whatever before they ever tried to overturn it and give him the driver's championship.
That's
retroactively, yeah. Probably.
Yeah, that's probably. He'll make an entire year's worth of Max Max Verstappen's driver's salary in a settlement, and he'll probably be okay with that.
Then that works.
But I
then
mean,
that works.
I mean, yeah, this wouldn't even be an issue if, or this wouldn't even be a thing if, you know, Bernie Ecclestone hadn't said anything last year. But like, the dude is, I mean, if for the fans, newer fans who did not live through the Bernie Ecclestone era, like imagine like Hugh Hefner running your favorite sport. Like, the dude was an old creepy guy and just always in controversy, and everyone wanted him out of the sport. And, you know, thankfully that happened with the sale to Liberty Media. So we don't have to deal with this guy anymore, but he's still managing to make the news, I guess.
All right. So the result of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix gives you a pretty far and away. Again, this is, I was thinking about it yesterday actually, and Checo has had the most quiet and no one cares second places in the history of the sport, I feel like, just these last two races. By the way, this is what they're asking him to do. They're like, just finish second. That's all we want you to do. And he's doing it. And I still think it's funny because they're all, anyway, who's going to get that seat at Red Bull? And you're going, why would it be any different? Like, if George Russell or if, I mean, let's say anybody. Let's say if Charles Leclerc was in that second car at Red Bull. Would it suddenly be that Max Verstappen would only win by, because what did he win this race by? 7 seconds total, something
seven,
like that, right?
7 seconds, yeah.
And you know what? I was like, well, it's actually pretty darn good over 50-something laps for his teammate. But, like, the reality is what, Dan? Because Max Verstappen just does not, it doesn't matter who's in that second car. I feel like he's just already going to be miles and miles and miles ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really believes that in a fair, you know, race between Max and Sergio without either of them having, you know, problems with, you know, pit lane or mechanical problems, that like Sergio could ever beat Max. But like, I think there's lots of people that out there who speculate that, oh man, Charles has the talent, or Carlos has the talent, or Lando has the talent, that if they were that second place driver, they would actually be as quick as Max, and we'd have an interesting driver's championship. But like you said, Red Bull doesn't want that. Red Bull wants Max to win the drivers, and a second driver who doesn't put up a fuss and is good enough to secure a constructors championship, which is boring for the rest of us. And this time last week, we were all thinking like, man, maybe Max is leaving. And what would that look like if Red Bull all of a sudden had that open seat as well? But that, all those rumors over the weekend got squashed, and, you know, Helmut Marko came out, made a statement that, you know, things have been figured out and that he's staying. And so it seems like all of that's kind of just been swept under the rug and the media has moved on. Unless, you know, something that we don't know about kind of flares up, it seems like that issue's been put to bed. And now it's just a ride to the end of the season with Max is going to win the championship, and Sergio's never really going to challenge him unless Max has a mechanical or, you know, strategy issue. So not the most exciting thing we're looking for, but I definitely think that there is a 2, 3, 4 drivers out there that would be putting up a much bigger fight to Max if they were in Sergio's spot. And I think Red Bull knows that too, and is a business decision at that point if that's what they really want.
You've driven around Albert Park Circuit. I can't remember if it was just because you were basically just driving through. You were in Melbourne on business.
Melbourne, yeah.
And part of the track, obviously, is just a park, right? And so you're driving through.
Yeah.
And the good thing for you was you did not go over the speed limit, because you would have gotten a ticket from the Australian police there.
And I had already gotten a ticket earlier that trip in Australia, so we didn't need a second one.
You did not need a second one. So, but let's talk a little bit about that race. Obviously, we'll do a full preview next week, but is this just going to be the Max show for the rest of the year, barring anything else? Is there another team that this is kind of their race, or this is kind of their place that they're able to put some things together and maybe outperform what they usually would at the prior circuits?
Yeah, I think as we get into the races that represent more of the extremes of like high downforce or low drag, that's where Red Bull will get challenged the most. So Monza, you know, being one extreme, and then Monaco being the other extreme. So the Albert Park Street Circuit is kind of more of a medium, or like a middle ground medium downforce track. And so it should play well into Max's hands. But last year we had a lot of chaos. Like we had those two red flags in the last like three or four laps of the race. That first corner is super tricky to get everybody through without any issues. And so, you know, it was one of the most exciting races last year. And so I'm looking forward to it again for that reason. But I expect Max to still be in his usual dominating form. And hopefully, you know, Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren can make these improvements and start to gain some time. Freddy Vasseur had some positive comments after the weekend that, you know, still stating that like Max is clearly in the lead, but if we could find a, you know, a half second, then we're going to be right there with them. So hopefully they could bring those updates and make it more competitive, or that we just get like a wild finish with the Alpine cars taking each other out, like, in the, just, you know, first corner.
Can we get a ton of rain? Like every race now, I'm like, can it just rain a ton? Like, I mean, can we just get something that will cause some sort of a problem? Historically, though, I think Max Verstappen now is the youngest driver by far to get to 100 podiums, 26 years and 5 months. The next closest was also a Red Bull driver at the time when he did it. My goodness. Oh, Sebastian Vettel at 20, mm-hmm. almost 29 years old. So I think it was just over 4 years younger than the next closest competitor. How long is Max Verstappen going to have a chokehold on this sport? Dan Jimenez.
I would say at least until the end of the 2025 season, and then the regs reset in 2026. And then it's, you know, kind of anybody's game after that. I mean, as long as Adrian Newey is at Red Bull and Max is at Red Bull, and they can keep themselves out of like any other type of administrative chaos, like there's no reason why they should lose. But I mean, that's where we put it on the other teams and say, hey, you're spending just as much, right? Mercedes, McLaren, Ferrari, you guys are spending just as much. You have great talent. You guys should be able to figure this out and make it competitive. And so, I mean, we'll see like how the rest of this year plays out, but like the sport is built so that the team who's been dominating has the least amount of development time and budget. And so that should be self-correcting. And we just have to hope that that plays out. And then in 2026, we get a shorter car, a more narrow car, a different engine, and that'll shake things up a bunch.
Isn't that kind of lame that we're like, well, hopefully the car will turn into a piece of garbage and then we'll know who the best driver is when it gets competitive, because Red Bull maybe screws some things up. That's a weird place to be in this sport.
Yeah. Yeah. This is very different from any other sport where every single season is a complete reset. It's Formula One kind of evolves in eras. Right now we are in the Red Bull Max Verstappen era, after having a Lewis Hamilton Mercedes era that lasted 7 seasons. So that's just how it goes.
All right. Well, unless you have anything else, I'm trying to think if there was some engineering stuff I needed to ask you about. Or maybe you already have some things you could pipe up with. I don't know.
Just the K-Mag strategy, we touched on it lightly, but the Haas having Kevin Magnussen just stretch that out. It'll be interesting to see what they do about that in the rules. I know that some people were calling afterwards kind of on the FIA to like do something about that with the rules, but I mean, he was playing within the rules. He just wasn't going his fastest. And if other cars can't get around him, if he's not going his fastest, like that's a them problem and like an FIA like regulations problem. That's not on Kevin Magnussen. So we'll see if more people do it and if they like decide to give him a sporting penalty. But I don't know how you enforce that to say, like, you know, you should be pushing your accelerator down harder, Kevin Magnussen, so we're going to penalize you. That's right. That's silly. So that was a very interesting one. And
penalize me.
Haas is on a little bit of a streak. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Go ahead and penalize us. We don't care. What are we going to do? Score a bunch of points? No. All right. Dan Jimenez, Alex Keery. We are, of course, Mode Push is our podcast, and we love that you can subscribe. Tell a friend and teach a neighbor about the podcast. Tell them about F1 as well. I'm finding out so many more people that are like closet F1 fans, and I'm like, no, you've got to tell everybody about it. Come on, you got to get going on it. So Dan, we'll be back at it next week, and we'll actually break down the Australian GP. Looking forward to it, man. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
Yep. There you go. Dan Jimenez, Alex Curry. We'll be back again next week. Stay right here and download the podcast wherever you find your fine podcasts.